Bienvenidos, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the show that I, your host, David Woodruff, affectionately call the Woodruff Report. This is my first podcast in a couple weeks. Strange circumstances arose which prevented me from podcasting at my usual time, but believe me, I'm coming at you as early as I possibly could. But the good thing about maybe missing a week is that we've got more to talk about. And we're into the playoff kind of part of the calendar year. You've got NBA playoff, NHL playoffs, and then there aren't really any other sports going on. Baseball has started, but the games aren't super competitive yet. Teams are just kind of figuring out what's going on, who fits where. We'll talk a little bit about baseball on this podcast, just briefly on the Giants' struggles. They're sitting not so great, last in the NL West right now, but it's early. But yeah, this is going to be a podcast which is very NBA heavy, mostly centered on the NBA playoffs, which have turned out to be as good as advertised. Most of the teams that were expected to win are up in the series, but there definitely are some upsets and interesting matchups. Look no further than the 1-8 matchup in the East between the Celtics and the Bulls. So, a full docket of good sports talk coming at you on this edition of the Woodruff Report. I'm your host, David Woodruff. Let's get into it in 3, 2, 1. So let's talk some basketball. And as I promised, we're going to start in the NBA, and look no further than the Eastern Conference, because we've got some excellent series going down. You've got Celtics-Bulls, the 1-8 matchup, LeBron James, and the Cavs are taking on the Pacers. You've also got the Raptors taking on the Bucks, and then you've got Wizards-Hawks in the East. So a lot of good matchups. So I'll start with the 1-8 matchup, which has been definitely... It has not been easy for the Celtics, who actually trail in the series 2-1. And it's definitely been a tough week for Celtics fans. You've got the team isn't playing well. And they're sort of suffering those growing pains that all young teams have. They play so well in the regular season, but as we know, playoff basketball is completely different. The tempo is slower, there's a lot more defense, and teams are going to struggle, especially for a lot of their players, it's their first year in it. And of course, it doesn't help that they are the number one seed, so there are a lot of heavy expectations on their back. And then, all of that is without the whole Isaiah Thomas situation. Isaiah Thomas, who is the Celtics' best player, averaged 28.9 points per game, so he carried the team a lot, and a very sad event happened within his family. His sister died, and evidently they were very close, so it was definitely hard on him. There are video clips of him crying before game one, inconsolable, teammates trying to make him feel better, but obviously our thoughts go out to his family, because you never want that to happen. And sort of selfishly, on this show, we're going to talk more about the sports aspect of it, which is that it could be hindering his play a little bit. Obviously, when you're not completely emotionally invested in a game, you do not play as well. And an event like that really shows you that there are things that are more important than basketball. And it could really be affecting his play, and the Celtics rely on him for so much, it can explain some of their struggles, but not all of them. And you have to give credit where credit is due, and you have to give credit to the Bulls, especially in Game 1, to their budding young star Jimmy Butler, who put up 30 points. And then you've also got all that veteran leadership on the team, Rajon Rondo, Dwayne Wade, they've all made deep runs into the playoffs, and they really understand playoff basketball. They understand that you've got to dictate the tempo, and that the game is not going to be as flowing end-to-end as a regular season game may be. So But it was really Jimmy Butler took over with his 30 in this game. So let's move on to game two, where many people expected the Celtics to kind of bounce back. I mean, after all, they are the number one seed in the East for a reason. Yet right out of the gate, the team struggled, trailing after the first quarter by 5 points, and you can probably attribute it to the team's three-point shooting, which has been abysmal so far this series. In game two, particularly, they shot just 30% from three, 10 of 33. And for a team that's been rather reliant on the three-point shot, as many teams in the NBA are these days, that those numbers aren't going to do it. And Al Horford has been non-existent this series. He has not been playing up to his expectations. He's not been playing as well as he was playing in the regular season. He's not playing as well as the Celtics hoped he would when they went and got him in the offseason as someone who can take them deep into the playoffs. And on the Bulls side, a near triple-double from Rajon Rondo with 11 points, 14 assists, and 9 rebounds led them. Dwayne Wade had 22, and of course, Jimmy Butler, that man that we talked about from Game 1, had 22. 18 points were chipped in from Robin Lopez, and that ultimately carried the Bulls to a rather easy win, and they took both games from the Celtics in Boston. But in Game 3, when the series shifted to Chicago, the Celtics actually came out and played much better basketball. They were playing more their brand. 30-plus assists in the game. And there was no one crazy player who went off. Al Horford had 18, Jay Crowder had 16, Isaiah Thomas had 16, and Avery Bradley had 15. So a lot of different valves were open in this game. Points were flowing in from different players. The ball was moving. They were finding each other for open shots. And it'll be interesting to see if the Celtics can carry over this game or if it was just an outlier in a series that the Bulls are going to control. But that series is 2-1 to the Bulls as we speak. So that's definitely a series to keep an eye on. With obviously the 8 seed, we lose this sometimes. The 8 seed is beating the 1 seed. This is crazy. This is not normal whatsoever. And so we'll see if the Celtics can take their positive basketball from game 3 and carry it over to the rest of the series, or if the Bulls are going to maintain control. Jimmy Butler, Dwayne Wade can take control. One very important note, Rajon Rondo is out indefinitely with a broken thumb that he suffered in Game 3. And he's been playing great basketball, especially in the postseason for the Bulls. So, let's move on to the Pacers-Cavs series, which the Cavs lead 3-0, but that does not tell the story of the series whatsoever. Game 1 in Cleveland was one of the best games of the postseason so far, with C.J. Miles missing a potential game-winning jumper as the buzzer sounded. There's kind of an alternate storyline in this series with the whole Paul George saga. He's been criticizing his teammates a little bit, saying, "I should have gotten the last shot," which is true, but maybe keep that private. Don't say it out publicly, because then the media will eat people alive. And then after game two, he said that the Pacers have to show better body language, called out Lance Stephenson, saying that he's a leader on this team, he needs to show better body language. And so it kind of sounds like he's whining when he criticizes his teammates after his performances maybe had been subpar. But let's go back to game one, because it was probably the best game of this series. Game three is up there, though. So what kept the Pacers in this game was 32 from their star Paul George, 32 points, and very good three-point shooting. They shot 11 of 24 from behind the arc. They also got points from some odd places. Lance Stephenson had 16, Monte Ellis had 11, and then some of their more reliable players, Jeff Teague, put in 15. So points were flowing As I said with the Celtics before in Game 3, points were flowing from a bunch of different valves in this game. And going into the fourth quarter, Cleveland had an 8-point lead, so it looked as though LeBron and company would close. But their defense has definitely left something to be desired this season. So LeBron had 32 points and 11 rebounds, so he obviously carried his team down the stretch. Again, the Cavs didn't shoot horribly from three-point, 11 of 28, hovering around that 35% mark. But the story of this game was the last 20 seconds or so, with the Cavs missing a free throw and the Pacers coming down the floor. Ball comes to Paul George. He's double teamed at the top of the key. He gives the ball up to CJ Miles, expecting to get it back. Question marks about whether if CJ Miles had given it back to Paul George would have had time to put up a shot. But CJ Miles actually pump fakes and gets himself a relatively open jumper at the buzzer, which he just leaves short, giving the Cavs a 1-0 series lead. So a lot of coulda, woulda, shoulda in Indiana. Had that shot gone in, this series would definitely be different. The Pacers stealing a game in Cleveland, not to mention all the confidence that will come, that would have come with a game one win. And they still can have some positive takeaways from this game. They competed, they could score, and the Cavs offense didn't go bonkers against them. But obviously that's kind of heartbreaking. And when you're facing a team as good as Cleveland with a player such as LeBron James, a transcendent talent, when you lose a game like that, it can be demoralizing knowing that, oh no, that was our chance to take this series and we don't have much of a chance now. So game two, again, the main storyline came in the fourth quarter with the Cavs up by almost 20 points. I think their lead was 18 going into the fourth quarter, but it was cut and the Pacers eventually got even with the Cavs. Paul George had 32 more in this game, and Jeff Teague really helped, putting in 23. Thaddeus Young also had 16, so points from an unlikely source there. But ultimately, the big three in this game from Cleveland took over. Kyrie Irving, Kevin Love, and LeBron James combined for 89 points, and when that happens, it's very unlikely that you're going to win the game. So the Cavs took game two by about 6 points. Then game three, the tables sort of turned because the Pacers were up by 25 points at halftime in this game. The Cavs just looked shell-shocked in the first half. But in the second half, they actually outscored the Pacers by 30 points behind a mammoth triple-double from the King. 41 points to go along with 12 assists and 13 rebounds. And the other two of the big three did not show up in this game. This was the LeBron show. They were actually sitting during the fourth quarter. Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving combined for 0 points in the fourth quarter. It was LeBron James. It was kind of a flashback to when Cleveland first drafted LeBron, and it was LeBron and a bunch of cast-offs, LeBron making them all better, kicking out to Channing Frye. Deron Williams suddenly looked 100 years younger. By the way, if he was 100 years younger, he would still be 40 years old. That's how old that man is. Oh, my goodness. But LeBron just finding people for wide-open shots and shutting down Paul George on the other end. Paul George had 36 in this game. He's been very consistent throughout this series, but they did not get points from other sources in this game. I think only two other players had more than 10 points. So the Cavs are leading the series 3-0, but again, that doesn't tell the story of the series. Let's move on to the Raptors-Bucks series, which many people thought was going to be interesting, and it has turned out to be just that. The Bucks took game one in Toronto by outscoring the Raptors by 19 points in the second half. This has been, if you want to watch free-flowing, points coming from everywhere kind of basketball. This has not been the series to watch. Lots of quarters with where a team scores less than 15 points. But Giannis Antetokounmpo, lo siento for butchering the name, has proven to be a budding superstar, if not already a superstar from his performances in this series. Antetokounmpo had 28 in Game 1 to lead the Bucks, and the Raptors stars, as they seem to so often do, just don't show up in the playoffs. Abysmal three-point shooting, and Kyle Lowry only had 4 points. Yes, you could count the number of points Kyle Lowry had on one hand, and for a star player, this is unacceptable. And when I saw this, I was just like, how is the difference so dire between how DeRozan and Lowry play in the regular season to the postseason? The basketball is different, but it's not like the basketball changes size or the basket shrinks. It must be mental at this point, because their performances in the playoffs these last 3 or 4 years have just, they've been awful, and they haven't been up to the standards of these guys. And it's not like they're loafing and lazy. They're putting in the work. They're just not getting any of the results when it comes to the postseason. Game two was a show of what could be for Toronto. They take the game, and Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan combine for 45 points. And Raptors fans are saying that's what we want to see. We want them to combine for 40-plus points, maybe even 50-plus points per game, because that's what we want our stars to do. So, yeah, Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan carry the team to a 6-point win, and even the series at 1-1. So things are looking good, optimistic. Maybe they've gotten things back on track. Nope, 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 no. Whoa, 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 whoa. Game three was just an absolute destruction, with the Bucks outscoring the Raptors by 20 in the first quarter. The first quarter. The Raptors only scored 12 points in the first quarter. And eventually, by halftime, the Bucks were leading by 27, and this became sort of a garbage time kind of game, because the Raptors are not the Cavaliers and cannot come back from 25 points at halftime. In this game, the Bucks, they had some great performances from Antetokounmpo and Chris Middleton, scoring 19 and 20 points, respectively. So the Bucks lead 2-1. With Game 4 in Milwaukee and a chance to lead 3-1, and this is an upset. So let's see if the Raptors can finally get over their playoff hump and their stars, who seem to have a mental affliction with good performances in the postseason, can come through. So finally in the East, I realize that I am talking a lot about each series. We go to the Wizards-Hawks series, which was supposed to be the closest one, but which the Wizards have rather easily taken the first two games of. Let's talk about Game 1. John Wall was absolutely incredible, scoring 32 points, dishing out 14 assists, and ultimately leading the Wizards to a pretty close win. He also had help from Markieff Morris and Bradley Beal, who put up 21 and 22 points respectively, and that was enough to cancel out good performances from Paul Millsap and Dennis Schroeder, who've been good all series. Game two, more of the same, with John Wall showing why he is one of, in my opinion, the top five players in the NBA. He put up 32, and his partner in crime, Bradley Beal, put up 31, including 16 in the fourth quarter, and the Wizards were able to outscore the Hawks by 12 in the final period and take game two. So, game three is actually going on later today, so we'll see if the Wizards can go one step closer to a sweep, or the Hawks can drag themselves back into the series. Let's go out west, where the series have been equally good. The Wizards currently lead the Trailblazers. The Spurs lead the Grizzlies. The Rockets lead the Thunder. And the Clipper-Jazz series currently favors the Clippers, but that's been good. Let's start with the Warriors-Blazers series, which is 2-0 in favor of the Warriors. So, game one was a showcase of why Portland is an incredible 8 seed. They've got an incredible backcourt pairing in Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum. And CJ McCollum just went insane in this game. He put up 41 points, and Damian Lillard put up 34. So with that backcourt scoring 70, 80-plus points, it seems like that would translate to good results. But a lot of things can seem to be good when you play the Warriors and then you find out that you're actually getting crushed. So this game ended up not actually being that close, with the Warriors taking a huge surge in the fourth quarter. Draymond Green with a big triple-double, and he was obviously the emotional center. He was more into it than some of the front row crowd members. When he would swat someone, get a block, he would flex, yell, do everything that Bay Area fans love from him. And he, of course, got some help from the big boys. KD had 32, Steph had 29, Klay had 15, and Draymond put in 19. So when Draymond's hitting shots, you literally cannot beat the Warriors unless, like, their other star players are resting or ill or injured. You're not going to beat the Warriors, because you can pretty much count on 25-plus from KD and Steph and 15-plus from Klay, and you never know when he's just going to score, like, 60 points in a quarter. So you've always got to be on the lookout for that. And on that note, you never know when Steph or KD is going to go for 60 in a quarter as well. So, yeah. Game 2, KD, Sean Livingston, both sitting out. KD strained his calf. Again, he was injured for a lot of the end of the regular season, so these playoffs are kind of, he's still getting back into the swing of things, so he maybe overexerted himself. The injury's not serious, but it was enough to have him sit for game 2, and we are still unclear if he is going to play in game 3. But KD sits, and it looks like this is the Blazers' opportunity, with CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard going off in game 1. If they can carry over that performance, a Golden State without KD might not be able to compete. But the Blazers just didn't really come to play in this game. The Warriors held the Blazers just 33% shooting as a team, and not a big night for anyone on Golden State, but 19 and 16 for Steph and Klay, respectively, led the way. They got points from a bunch of different places, including Ian Clark, who's been so good all season and continued his great play in the postseason. So game 3 again is later today, and with the way the Warriors are playing, all the signs point to a sweep, but you never know when this series is in Portland. They've got some great fans in the Moto Center, or I think it's called the Moto Center. Don't quote me on that. And you never know when CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard are going to combine for like 300 points. So you can never count the Blazers out. Let's shift to the Spurs-Grizzlies series, which the Spurs currently lead 2-1. In both the games, in San Antonio were won by the Spurs. Game 1 was not close, and it led many to believe that this was going to be a blowout sweep series. Kawhi Leonard had 32 points. LaMarcus Aldridge also chipped in 20, and that was enough to cancel out a pretty good performance from Mark Gasol, who put up more than 30. Game 2 was much closer, but ultimately the Grizzlies were not able to atone for a terrible first quarter in which they were completely outscored. Kawhi Leonard had an absolutely incredible game, putting up 37. Mike Conley had 24 and Zach Randolph had 18, and there was some questionable officiating in the game. Leonard shot 19 free throws, more than the entire Grizzlies team combined. David Fitzdale, the Grizzlies coach, went on kind of a post-game rant about the officiating. That's kind of the story of this game, but obviously a post-game rant does not change the results of a game, and the Spurs were leading 2-0, with the series shifting back to Memphis for a pretty much can't-lose game for the Grizzlies, and they delivered, winning the game comfortably by 11 points. Mike Conley, Mark Gasol, and Zach Randolph combined for 66 points. That's about half of the total number of points that the Grizzlies scored. And despite a fourth quarter surge from the Spurs. The Grizzlies were able to hold them off and win comfortably, as I said before. So 2-1 with game four in Memphis. And this series is far from over, especially if the Grizzlies can come back and tie this series. So let's move on to one of the most hyped up series of the whole playoffs, the Rockets Thunder series. Westbrook versus Harden, two MVP colossuses colliding. And from the first two games of this series, it looked as though the Thunder just hadn't showed up, with the Rockets taking the first two games comfortably. In game one, 37 from Harden, and the Rockets outscoring the Thunder by 16 points in the fourth quarter ultimately led to a landslide victory. Then, in game two, a humongous triple-double from Russell Westbrook, 51 points, 10 assists, 13 rebounds, was not enough to beat the Rockets, as the Rockets again took control in the fourth quarter. The story of this game was Westbrook. I'm not sure about the exact number, I'm sorry about that, but he took a bunch of shots in the fourth quarter, more than like Steph took all game in game one of the Warriors-Blazers series in one quarter, and he wasn't very good. And the Rockets were able to take advantage of this and win game two. So, again, as I spoke about earlier in the Spurs-Grizzlies series, the series shifts to Oklahoma City, a must-win game for the Thunder, and they too delivered. 44 points from James Harden to go along with 22 from Lou Williams was not enough, as Russell Westbrook put up another triple-double, 32, 13, and 11. Taj Gibson chipped in 20 points, and Victor Oladipo put in 12, and they were able to get just enough help to pull out a two-point victory. James Harden had a chance to win. His three clattered off the front rim, agonizingly close to a 3-0 series lead for the Thunder, but 2-1 with game four in Oklahoma City, and a good chance for the Thunder to tie this series up and make it very interesting. This was a series that many people predicted to go to seven games, and if the Thunder win game four, I believe it will go to seven games. So the final series that I'm going to talk about today is the Jazz-Clippers series, and game one was actually won by the Jazz. They stole a game in Los Angeles on a buzzer beater by Joe Johnson. Ice in his veins, etc., etc. But Utah showed why they are the 5 seed in the West. 19 from Gordon Hayward, 15 from Derek Favors, 16 from George Hill, and it was enough to beat the Clippers, despite 26 from Blake Griffin and 25 from Chris Paul. And this actually produced shockwaves around the league. Should the Clippers rebuild? Is it over? Is their golden era done? Should they move Blake Griffin, trade Chris Paul? Should they completely demolish everything? But games 2 and 3 really kind of righted the ship, with the Clippers winning both. 24 from Blake Griffin, 18 from DeAndre Jordan, 23, I believe, from Chris Paul, and the Clippers win rather comfortably. Game three, the rubber match, who could take control of the series back in Utah, again went to the Clips, who outscored the Jazz by 7 in the fourth quarter. So, 2-1 to the Clippers, game four in Utah. If Utah can even the series, it basically starts the series from scratch, and if the Clippers don't win this series, it does seem like they're going to have to demolish their team and end the golden era, because right now they cannot compete with some of the better teams in the West, like the Rockets, Spurs, Warriors, with the team they have now. So I don't think I'm going to talk about baseball, because I've kept you long enough. This is one of my longer podcasts, but the playoffs have just been so great, I needed to let you all in on how good they are. Tune in. Games are on pretty much every night on TNT, ESPN, or ABC. definitely watch some of those games. So thank you for listening. I'm your host, David Woodruff. This is the Woodruff Report. We'll be back next week, hopefully at the normal time. Thanks for tuning in.